Chapter 51.
You know I don't like to start fights, Caris said.
Gavin froze with a bit of rabbit stew on its way to his mouth, clearly not an opening that boded well. He made a non-committal noise. He and Caris were eating alone tonight in their little tent not far from the beach. The weeks had passed in a blur of meaningful work and renewed friendship and fruitless searching and quietly growing dread. The Tyrians had landed in wonder and tears. The Third Eyes people had provided an enormous feast, and Gavin had put the Tyrians to work immediately. Within days he had a plan and a routine. As much as possible, he handed over power to Corran Danavis, supporting his decisions, deferring to him publicly, and bolstering the man until the Tyrians were almost as likely to turn to Corvan to settle disputes and give guidance when Gavin was there as when he was gone. And Gavin was gone almost every day, scouring the seas for the blue bane with Caris. He'd sat with his abacus and his map, checked and double-checked his calculations and his assumptions, and then checked and double-checked the seas. The bane wasn't there. Wherever the 2 hours east and 2.5 hours south started from, it wasn't from his beach on Sears Island. Nor, running it backward, was it simply 2 hours west and 2.5 hours north of White Mist Reef, though that had taken him some time to figure out too, because the reef wasn't simply one point on the map. It was an entire zone in the sea, 5 times larger than Sears Island. So did he measure that distance from the presumed centre of the reef, or from some particular point therein? Or from every possible point in a circle. And it wasn't like his skimmer's speed was a simple constant either. Some days he was tired and he'd cover leagues less, though he thought he'd been travelling at the same rate.
It's about Kip, Caris said.
That seemed safe enough.
Yes, he ventured.
What are you going to do to that boy?
Pardon? He hadn't even seen Kip in weeks.
He's a boy, Gavin.
I was under the impression he was a ptarmigan.
Don't give me that, Caris said, flushing.
She shifted on her stool and winced. Training with amateurs meant collecting bruises from where people weren't in control enough of their own bodies to pull blows short consistently.
I have no idea what we're even talking about, Gavin said.
You've given him some impossible task, haven't you? Caris asked.
Gavin scowled.
How do you know?
I know you.
You say that like it's a bad thing, Gavin said lightly, grinning, trying to defuse.
But Caris obviously wasn't in the mood to make peace.
He's a boy, not a weapon. You've loosed him like an arrow at some target. I don't know who. I don't even care. You're using him to advance some agenda.
Gavin absorbed that, pursed his lips, set his spoon down into his stew.
That's right. We all serve.
It's not right. He's a good kid and he deserves better. You've acknowledged him as your son. Now be a father.
What?
What did you just say? Gavin demanded. He's a child. You're treating him like he's another soldier. He needs your time, Gavin. He needs you to put him first.
I don't put him first, Gavin said frankly.
Exactly.
Exactly. And what exactly would you have me abandon so I can go have playtime with Junior? Clothing and housing 50,000 refugees? Not important. Destroying a bane? Not important. Saving all 7 satrapies? Not...
That's not what I meant, and you know it. You've said Kip is your son. Are you going to treat him like he's your son or not?
Kip is not important, Gavin shouted.
Caris sat back, defeated.
Then you are a smaller man than I thought you were.
What would you have of me? Gavin shouted.
Decency, she said quietly.
He pounded the table with a fist so hard it bounced and spilled soup and wine everywhere. He roared,
"Decency! I do everything for others! Everything!"
A lie, Caris said quietly, but so very close to true. How is it that those closest to you get the worst of you, Gavin Gyle?
Out! Get out!
He roared. She got up and walked out. At the flap of the tent she turned pitiless eyes on him and said,
"You're a great man, but only when seen from afar."
Then she was gone. What the hell was that about? He'd thought things were warming up with Caris as they worked together. They'd always worked well together, always enjoyed each other's company, even when they didn't speak. And now this ambush, where had this come from? Women. Gavin mouthed a few more curses. He could go after her. He should go after her. And what? Tell her what?
Tell her the whole truth?
The thought chilled his anger. He swore again and pulled out his charts. He had work to do. Damn her. He'd ended up abandoning his shortcut, which had probably put him 2 weeks behind what a methodical approach would have yielded, and narrowed the search through guesswork and good intelligence. He'd visited cities around the Cerulean Sea, asking if people had seen blue whites, and if so, what direction they were travelling. He'd even come across whites twice, once in a sailing dinghy, the other rowing a blue Luxendori of its own design. Both had been as unhelpful as possible, of course, trying to kill Gavin and Caris, but Gavin had found where each had come from, one from a little town outside Idos in Atash, and the other from Garriston. Taking the blue's penchant to move in efficient straight lines, he'd calculated where their paths should intersect, and found nothing there. Clearly, one or both of them had either been a bad sailor or had been blown off course by the autumnal storms that were all too frequent now. Blown off course by a storm from out of nowhere. Pity the bastards. Ambushed. No wonder they say the sea is a woman. Gavin had ended up dividing the Cerulean Sea into zones and grids, and he would skim as far as he could, checking every half hour on his sextant and compass that he was staying online. Of course, at the speeds he was travelling, he could have gone off course for a half hour by a few degrees, easily done during the hard weather, then corrected himself, and the next day traversed that day's path perfectly and still have cut a wide enough berth that he would miss a small island. The only other option was to stop every 10 minutes and take the painstaking readings. He was adept in the tool's use, but stopping that often meant leagues and leagues that he didn't even get to. He also had to be aware that the bane was moving. If it moved too fast, it could go straight across his grid and he'd never be the wiser, even if all of his other calculations and guesses were accurate. It was infuriating. Caris had suggested he build another condor and fly. It would have been a great suggestion if he could still draft blue. It had taken him months to design the condor with the original materials, and it had still been a long way from perfect. The yellow Luxen could be substituted for blue, but it was heavier, and infinitely more difficult to draft a stable version. He thought that within a couple of weeks he could figure out a design that would suffice, but made from solid yellow, it would be a permanent design. He couldn't make a new one every day, and he couldn't easily unravel it if he lost it to some enemy. So that meant finding a secure place to store it while he perfected it. And then if something went wrong when he was in midair, he wouldn't be able to simply patch it quickly with blue. If something went wrong, he would crash, and all his work would be for naught. If he knew that he was going to be searching the sea for 6 months, it would be worth it. But he didn't know that. Beyond infuriating. And his Tyrians needed him. Their few drafters would burn themselves out helping with clearing forests and building shelters if Gavin didn't lend them aid. Corvin had convinced the Seers Islanders, who were almost all drafters, to help in exchange for future work, but there was still always more work to be done. Instead of trying to do it all himself, Gavin put his copious drafting abilities to work in a way that first amused himself and then astounded everyone else. He built bricks. Yellow Luxen bricks. With what they'd learned building Brightwater Wall, his architects and labourers built forms for interlocking solid bricks. Gavin would walk around the forms every morning for an hour, filling them with yellow Luxen, drafted perfectly, sealed perfectly, practically indestructible, and then he'd head out for the day. The labourers took the bricks and built everything out of them. At first, content to simply guard him on the island, and while they travelled, Caris had eventually begun helping out on her own. She trained the best of the locals in fighting, sometimes organizing javelina hunts. Though javelinas and the rarer giant javelinas had long been native to Tyria, there hadn't been any close to Garriston for decades, and facing the dangerous, unpredictable animals was the next best training to actual warfare. Whenever Gavin and Caris returned to the island, he was always surprised. With plentiful free building supplies and 50,000 willing workers and friendly locals and good governance, their little port went from a camp to a settlement in quick order. There were no walls, as per Corvin's agreement with the Third Eye, who thought that mutual vulnerability was a better guarantor of peace than mutual defensibility. But every other possible structure was springing up. Gavin felt proud to be part of building something for once. He spent most evenings with Corvin, talking governance, mulling over problems, making plans, even playing a game or two of Nine Kings. It was good to talk, to jest, to drink too much wine every once in a while. And he'd kept Caris at arm's length, desperate for her companionship and desperately fearful of her, treating those closest to him worst, indeed. He set the charts down. He hadn't even been looking at them for the last few minutes. This wasn't about Kip, he realized, at least not purely about Kip. For Caris, this was about the path not taken. Kip was of an age where he could have been their son, had Gavin not broken his and Caris's betrothal. Caris wasn't saying. How can you keep your distance from a bastard you unknowingly whelped on some peasant? She was saying, is this the kind of father you would have been to our son? Or Holam have mercy. It was a punch in the stomach. And she was right. Kip was a good boy, but Gavin barely knew him, and he certainly didn't know what to do with him. He should have kept him here, should have trained him himself. It hadn't even really occurred to him. He'd seen Kip as baggage, a burden to be passed off to Commander Ironfist as quickly as possible. Everyone had demands of the prism, and that had been one too many. Kip was a good boy, but he wasn't Gavin's son. Gavin could tell the whole world that he was. He could take the disgrace of having fathered a bastard. He could even face his own father over it. But there was a difference between a grand gesture and daily decency. Add Kip to the list of problems awaiting him when he got back to the Chromeria. Not waiting, festering. Many of them problems that he desperately wanted to go tackle, but he felt trapped until he found the Blue Bane. The next morning, Caris greeted him as if nothing had happened, and he let it lie too. There was nothing he could do about Kip or anything else until he found the Bane. So he stopped whenever he saw ships out in the open sea, transformed the skimmer into a dory and rowed to them, asked his questions and deflected theirs, and kept searching. The problems elsewhere had to be growing. If he was gone too much longer, the Chromeria would declare him dead, despite the letters he sent with ship captains and the return letters from the Chromeria that he ignored. But he couldn't leave his search. He hated Blues too much. This, too, was part of his five purposes, to destroy all whites. He owed Sebastian that. Nothing would keep him from it. Not even the Chromeria itself. He took Caris with him almost every day, partly because she wouldn't let him leave her, and partly because he hoped she would feel the blue. The third eye had let slip that everyone in the proximity of a Bane would be affected, but drafters most powerfully. Gavin's plan was to use Caris to find it, and then go back the next day without her to destroy it. She would be furious with him, of course, but he didn't care. And the days passed, and passed, and passed. 2 months passed. 3.